up, Adam?
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
Good. What are you doing?
Drinking me some good pivo. Around the bend, the Vera. Love it.
Wait, pistachio cream. Does that mean like the river bends south of the city or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Point for this?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it is. It is brewed and canned in Chicago. So that's probably what it is. It's where the bend in the Chicago River is. It's good. I recommend it. I bought it, you know, as a joke because there's a guy with a plague mask on it. But I've been drinking it for like 6 weeks now.
Mm.
It's my go-to plague beer. So
I'm drinking some coffee here. Mm-hmm, here mm-hmm. Bright and early in Ho Chi Minh City. It's 7:22 in the morning.
Ooh, and, nice.
Yeah.
A fun fact for y'all: Jeff is leaving the Kong Delta there. He's heading out here to the States. Where he's going to be anally probed for 14 days.
It's going to be curious to see what takes place with that.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I wonder if they're going to tell you to quarantine for 14 days or if they're just going to be like, hey, mister, do your thing now.
Well, that would be interesting, too, because you would think that the government would be putting something into place. I don't know. But still, in the United States, it's all self-elective, right? So it's kind of like, all right, sweet, see ya.
Wait, do you have like a direct flight, or are you like landing in like L.A. or San Francisco or something like that?
I gotta go to Tokyo, and then L.A., and then down south to down there hanging out with them people in Texas.
Damn. So three different flights. Fuck that.
Tejas. Well, yeah, the whole thing was a mess to begin with. I'd rather skip over that part of my life. Point is, guys, don't waste any time getting airline miles, because at the end of the day, they're 100% fucking worthless.
Oh yeah, they're worthless. They don't mean anything. They mean something in a good economy. In a bad economy, when every airline's supposedly out of money, they don't mean fuck.
No, they mean that they exist in place for the airlines to take advantage of you at any given point in time. And then also, if you call and you're saying, well, hey, like, I want to use these miles that I used for you to sort of bilk me for using a credit card with you guys, and then they treat you like a second-class citizen.
Fuck so. That's why I'm very against airlines getting money. I'm all about nationalizing them and then telling half those people to get fucked. The CEOs, that is, the maintenance guys, stay, obviously. Well, some of them, not all of them. You know who you are.
Well, yeah, but I think if you nationalize them, the people that aren't going to lose their jobs are the maintenance guys. It's just going to be the CEO fat cats running around bankrupt, you know, going bankrupt every 7 years or whatever.
That's right. That's what all they've been doing. They've been siphoning money, and then, now the company's bankrupt, but I still get my $12 million bonus. I don't think so, buddy. I don't think so.
Hey, so what's up with Kim Jong-un? Is he dead?
I don't know. All I've been reading is that he was in critical condition when he had his heart operation for, I guess, you know, some sort of valve up there. Probably wasn't working proper. He's eating all these, you know, fat meats.
Foie gras.
All that fatness. All nice and built up in his heart valve.
What do you mean, man? He's trying to go full keto.
Just meat, nothing else. So I don't know. The South Koreans are saying that he's not dead. But then again, it's the South Koreans. So I don't know. If he's dead, he's dead. If he isn't, then, you know, he's too weak to do anything. And I feel he's going to become ousted no matter what. China, in my opinion, is probably loving this. They're like, oh, hell yeah. We can, you know, throw in one of our fellas in there. Maybe cause a small skirmish for the United States. Have them, you know, fight that while we focus here on Hong Kong and Taiwan. At least that's what I would be thinking if I was them.
So when do you think they're going to start transitioning their attention away from the corona debacle back toward Hong Kong?
I think they're starting, no? I'm sure it's already in their like peripheral to be like, hey, we need to go back to Hong Kong and figure that shit out. Send in some troops if we can. So I assume that's already like that's their main plan. I feel that they're probably doing some damage control with regards to the shitty equipment they sent worldwide. And you sent that really good Economist article about China's propaganda via healthcare you know, packages to the world, and it failed miserably. And I agree with it. I think it's a bunch of bullshit, and the Chinese or their goodwill is as good as their products made in China, meaning that it's only good for a couple of days before it's fucking shitty.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of people don't trust Chinese manufacturing. I don't know. It's it is this new sort of charm offensive. I don't really think it's. I mean, my God, it's crazy to see on the one hand, like, how, again, the Western media is just eating up communist doctrine.
Oh, yeah.
Like, for instance, like, Vietnam officially opens up today, guys. So, this airplane better take off on Saturday morning.
Today's episode of meaningless garbage. Like, that, it's been opened up, except they didn't really care. People have been dying in somewhere in the woods.
Well, according to the BBC, again, Western news outlets reading into the communist riffraff, they reported that Vietnam has, through a campaign of, what did they say, relative war or something along this nonsense.
What does that
they
even
attacked
mean?
Attacked the coronavirus at the end of January, and they've been the most successful.
Isn't it always weird that the governments, when they talk about like fighting a pandemic, they always talk about it in like a military terms? As if they don't have any other, like, you know, vocabulary for it.
Wasn't Trump saying this makes me like a wartime president?
Yeah, I know. It's like, really? I don't see it. You know, there aren't bombs and buildings being blown up. There's no food shortage. I mean, there's some food shortages, but you know, wartime. Nothing's burning.
It's more about like the bigger argument about the food issues. Like, people won't be able to afford it.
Yeah, so, that's
like,
true.
The global economy, what this was called, like the, I can't remember, we talked about this in one of the episodes of the past, but this is like the lifeboat theory where in the 1970s, just one second. In the 1970s, they were theorizing that, you know, you would only be able to produce so much food as one nation, and then if you were to be like, say, the Sean Penns of the world, and you wanted everybody and your grandmother to move to the United States, then therefore you would have to give up your seat on the so-called life raft, namely because we'd run out of food. But what they're finding is more so than not, anyways, it's just sort of you just can't afford it right now. So
it's true.
You know, global production and selling it back into the, you know, mass economic community, what are you going to do?
Well, don't you think that that's weird that we can't afford it, yet there's a whole bunch of farmers that are throwing out potatoes and a whole bunch of like produce because nobody's buying
it? Well, Americans can afford it. I think, like, more importantly, though, it's like you can't pay for the logistic companies to like ship milk.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, again, why do we subsidize airlines when you can't subsidize milk? You know?
I feel like food should be more subsidized than, you know, travel. I mean, hell, with today's technology, and you could just look at the, you know, talk to somebody via Zoom or Skype or, hell, even Facebook. Like, you don't really need the travel aspect of it, unless, of course, you're the cartels and travel is very important to you.
Hey, well, I have this question about Zoom in general. I mean, why is everybody so enamored with it? It's like they just learned about Skype or what?
I don't know. I've never heard of Zoom outside of this, and it feels to me like it's just some sort of, you know, it's just nothing else but a Skype Junior to me. Like, why is Zoom so popular? Is it because you could probably have like 14 different people on your screen?
Well, I don't know. Oh, I don't know, because I used to use, so I've used Zoom for like 3 years, but it's just kind of a bullshit application that was free that replaced Adobe Connect. So like, if you were using Adobe software, a suite or whatever, and then you were paying extra for this broadcasting software, then Zoom came along and was like, all right, well, up to an extent, right? There's like Zoom Premium, obviously, which I don't really know what that is.
Who owns Zoom?
And then also, I use like Google Meet for other stuff, which, I mean, I don't want to support the hegemon that is Google or Apple or Facebook or whatever. But my God,
Would you look at that. Zoom Video Communications. Eric Yuan. Is this owned by a Chinese company? Well, what is this? What is this?
It's probably like a 10-cent production.
Eric, yeah, this motherfucker. Zoom is owned by the Chinese. Or technically, this guy's Chinese-American, born in Taiyuan, China.
Oh, one second. I got to go shut my laundry door before this gets loud.
That's right. Shut it off. So let me see here. Let me read you people some stuff. So Zoom is owned by this Chinese-American businessman named Eric Yuan. He owns about 22% of it.
Back.
So that's probably a net worth, which is crazy. Its net worth is $7 billion. Zoom, that's nuts for a company that has only been around for what? How long has this place been around? A couple of years? Zoom Communications, just a few years, I guess. It's 293rd on the Forbes list of billionaires, this Eric Yuan guy. So I'm not liking it. Anything that's owned by the Chinese right now, not a fan of it.
Well, I mean, this is what sort of Trump rallies against, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the idea in the 1980s was obviously, you know, we're looking at this big sort of whatever. Everybody wants to get embroiled in the theoretical debates and neoliberalism and offshoring and so on and so forth. But I think, like, more importantly, what really is kind of coming to fruition is this issue of IP that has more or less just been grifted,
mm-hmm.
right, by a lot of, say, Chinese manufacturers, et cetera, that were allowing us to operate there, but given sort of these pretty strict levies where it was like, yeah, well, you can have access to all my IP so long as I can have access to your market of 1.5 billion people. And now you're seeing is, I wouldn't be surprised. And again, this is like the ignorance of the American people, right? Because by and large, right, they're the largest consumers per capita mm-hmm. by far. In terms of disposable income, I mean, obviously, because like you levy it through credit and other forms of debt mechanisms, right? But I think, you know, it's funny because on the one hand, it's like, again, this comes down to like this idea that we've talked about in the past about how you would assume if you're a progressive mm-hmm. or even just left of center, you would be pretty fully on board about bringing jobs back, right? Mom and pop shops.
Oh, this is just like Japan. Japan wants all its manufacturing that's in China to come back to Japan. They set up a $2.2 billion fund to subsidize any any company that comes back to China or comes back to Japan. That to me sounds like exactly what the U.S. needs to start doing.
Well, I think here's the deal, right? I think globalism is a failed concept in a way. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty good food and like, you know, I like variety in life. So there's some benefits for sure to immigration in a lot of ways.
Of course.
Yeah, I think though, when it comes down to sort of this contingency where it's like, no, it's always a net positive. It's always a net positive. If you don't believe it's net positive, you're xenophobic, you're racist, you're a patriarchy, you know, you're whatever. You're you're part of the patriarchy, you're a misogynist, you're whatever. You're an angry white man. Get off my lawn, right?
yeah.
You know, you're Clint.
That's right. Just kidding, Clint. Shots fired.
Just kidding, Clint. But hey, man, you know, you're out, so you know you're not here today, so I can say what I want.
That's right.
But no, I think it's kind of problematic because I think you should be able to talk about it in a way that's like, well, look, I mean, here's the deal. Since NAFTA, there has been a continual sort of, you know, reduction of just sort of decent levels of prosperity for the manufacturing sector, blue collar workers in the United States. I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of clear as the day is long, and that's why, by and large. Regardless of a lot of the stuff Jimmy Dore was talking about, but by and large, this is why sort of Trump became the president of the United States, right?
Can you mention what Jimmy Dore was talking about? Because maybe some viewers aren't aware or listeners.
Right. So Jimmy Dore is a pretty cool guy. Adam brought me on to him as he does. But basically, he's just been a comedian, right, for a long time. And then since I don't know any more really longer term historical facts about the guy, but you know, he's born and bred in Chicago, and he's been hosting sort of a political banter radio show / YouTube channel for the last few years, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
And since it's become like a little bit more, I would say, really spot on with what he's looking at. So a lot of the ways that they're talking about, again, it's like Jimmy Dore was laying out these basic facts about what took place during the Obama administration. Right. And then especially looking more closely and succinctly at this issue of how when the debt crisis struck in 2008-2009, rather than provide any sort of sustenance for those who were basically about to get thrown out of their houses, he allowed it to take place. And I don't know how many Americans it was.
It was like 5.2 million people got kicked out of their house.
Yeah. So under like basically what he like from that point forward, along with sort of. The creation of these immigration mechanisms that he's put across the border, the level of Latin Americans that were deported under his administration, I think are more than that combined of all of the Bush and Clinton administrations, maybe even more.
It was the past four presidents before him. So it was right. And then, Bush Jr., Bush Sr., Clinton, and Reagan, which is kind of wild. Because right. I'd expect them to be you know, deporting people like no other. But I guess Obama really had it against them Latinos.
Right. Well, and then also on top of that, you know, regardless of a lack of, say, empathetic approach to his economic platform as well as his immigration platform, he also had basically Citigroup as his entire cabinet, right?
Well, yeah, Citigroup gave him the list. He's like, you know, he was asking every bank, you know, who should I have on my cabinet, blah, blah, blah. And Citibank was like, here you go. These are the people that you can trust. And it turned out all of them to be scumbags. Scumbag, like, I'm sorry, but Larry Summers is a piece of shit.
Oh, for sure. And not to mention, these are probably relationships also cultivated through Joe Biden, right?
Which, oh, yeah, for sure, like, for sure.
Right, and I think what the most awkward thing or ironic thing about the entire thing, it's like, yes, Donald Trump is a menace. The guy, you know, he's a bumbling crazy man. I mean, look at the way he trolls people.
Yeah, he's a New York businessman. Well, what do you want? Well, hold on, super funny. I like his humor.
He has serious comedic chops. But I would say more importantly, remember who you're dealing with. I mean, his father, and then he himself later. Are nothing more than like slumlords, right?
Yeah, more or less.
So I don't know if that's a graduated version or somebody who's trying to get into car sales, but slumlording is sort of, you're a skeevy, you know, smarmy businessman. And that's what you have running the country. And I think in part and parcel, that's kind of the one of the things I think is always hilarious, right? It's like growing up, you see a lot of, say, the baby boomer class come through this huge idealization of like celebrity and wealth. And it's always like, no, he's a millionaire. No, he's a billionaire. Da, da, da. It's like, what is it Americans privy? And this is basically translatable to both elective, say, political classes, which would be the Democrats and the Republicans in the United States, because more or less, we're just all voting for the same corporate entities. It's just, how do you want it painted? Do you want the guy to lie to you, then turn you around and fuck you in the ass? Or do you just want him to tell you straight on, like, I'm just taking this from you? And I think this is what Jimmy Dore is pointing out quite uniquely. But, you know, more importantly, looking at these economic factors that we're talking about. Now, Japan, obviously, what I think is going to be very interesting for people that look at, like, developing economies is, while on the one hand, yes, it's good to try to, you know, bring people out of poverty, et cetera, if it's done mostly through manufacturing and exploitation of labor, and now that's going to turn on its ear, it's going to be sort of like the Brave New World. And China, especially given the fact that the Chinese Communist Party, right, the CCP, is heavily dependent upon having this inflated economy bolstered almost entirely upon exports, right, and manufacturing. If that goes away, who knows what's going to take place next?
Do we got ourselves another cultural revolution? Or do we have ourselves an economic revolution peppered with cultural undertones?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if revolutions will take place anymore. You know, here's the problem now with revolutions. Is now we've kind of entered into this foray of sort of like, you know, masked authoritarianism where, you know, we know you can already be tracked basically everything you're doing, but now basically they're getting people to legitimize it, right? So now Google, who's getting together? Google and Apple or?
I don't know what you're talking about. Wait, what are you
like
talking about?
Like
where
they're doing like the contact tracing.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's Google. Google's doing that.
But they're doing it in partner with Facebook
It's Facebook. Facebook and Instagram, because it's through the photo app. That's Instagram. So it's through Instagram. So it's through the Facebook. So Google and Facebook are joining forces so they can track who you've been in touch with regards to your location tracking on your phone via your Facebook app. Or your Instagram app, which is really fucked up if you think about it. Because automatically it kind of connects the dots. Like, you know, if Linda has coronavirus and Linda talked to Betty.
Wait. Hold on. This is what I was talking about. So Apple and Google, they joined forces.
I haven't heard about this then.
Yeah, to create a new app called Trace Together.
Dude, now, fuck off. Anything called trace that include any other word after it, that's like, hey, have you been reading 1984?
Adam, if you look this up, it's even better because the together is emboldened while the trace is like a shadow behind it. And it gets better. Like, so now the French government is urging Apple and Google to ease privacy restrictions so it's easier to pinpoint people. I mean, here's the problem. It's like, okay, fine. In the United States, if you get like a contact tracing app that, you know, it emits through like Bluetooth frequency or whatever, that's fine, because maybe you get a notification like, hey, you were in contact with somebody, like check your symptoms over the next few days. But also it's gonna freak a bunch of people out.
No, dude, that to me is a slippery slope. That it begins that and it ends as you've been in touch with Comrade Jefferson. Comrade Jefferson's a communist. You're about to get popped.
Well, no, it ends just like what takes place in Vietnam, where all of a sudden you're kicking it in a quarantine camp for the next 2 months.
Yeah. It begins as a quarantine camp and ends as, hey, we're going to do some dirt digging exercises, keep you guys in shape, and then pow, you're in the dirt. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like I said, like, you know, we already, like, Edward Snowden, by and large, already shed light on this issue then.
Yeah, why is that guy not getting a Nobel Prize? Instead, Obama gets for just being elected. Food for thought. Well,
because he doesn't fit the right intersectional coding.
true story.
If that's the proper way of saying it. I don't know, guys. I think this corona thing, though, now it's at a point where it's like, all right, literally people are opening up left, right, and center, sort of like getting back to basics. I don't understand what's going on in the United States. I think now it's become like it's kind of like a me versus them kind of thing now.
All right, so let's talk about this, because while you're over there in Nam, a whole bunch of stuff has been going on here, mostly people protesting out in the streets saying that it's time to open up America. You know, they're protesting in Wisconsin and Michigan and California, Florida, Louisiana, even here in nearby in the small town of Homer Glen. A whole bunch of, you know, people just get out there and say it's, you know, give me liberty or give me corona. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, again, to be like the old man again or whatever, like, I, from day one, this is just, you know, okay, yes, people are dying, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's okay. It's something that's like highly infectious for sure, right? But now you're seeing basically the overall mortality rate reduced quite rapidly to, it's getting closer and closer to that of the flu. Okay. Mm-hmm. What does it say? I mean, because say, for instance, if flu is extremely infectious, right? And then, you know, obviously the CDC and they publish their statistics or whatever, but how many people actually go and verify whether or not they had the flu? I mean, I've never gone to the doctor after having the flu, which I'm sure I had one or two times in my life. It's pretty aggressive, right? But, you know, I never went and registered that. People, like, you're not, it's not known. It's not a known fact that this many people had it. It's always speculative, right? So, what do you operate here in Vietnam? You operate under a highly speculative system with zero testing. And now it's being triumphed as the, you know, the global leader against corona. Well, they're opening up today, you know, not to mention like the factories have been opened up in China for however long, you know, the last few weeks. So what's going to take place? Who knows? I think it's sort of coming to this point where, I don't know, like, because the U.S. government clearly doesn't know how to sustain an economy under a crisis, don't you just basically have to go back to work?
Yeah, some people, I think, probably want to go back to work. The question is, can they go back to work when, number one, those jobs are gone? You know, bars and restaurants are, you know, are saying that they're going to be downsizing by at least 40% when they reopen. With that being said, you know, the plans that states have in the works, and even the federal government has in the works, is that restaurants can be open, but they can only have 50% capacity, meaning 50% of the revenue that they generated before. And bars can only have standing room with only 25% capacity of what they had before, meaning lower sales. And, you know, you need to start figuring out who you're about to, you know, like more or less cut, like who's coming back to work and who isn't. So as much as these protests are about opening up America, I think people need to start looking at the reality of things. And to me, that is that, A, I'd say probably 50% of the jobs that you think you're going to go get back to are non-existent, while there's also a potential of a second wave. And as we know, usually, historically, second waves tend to be deadlier than the first wave, because the first wave is usually, you know, slowed down via something that we've had, which is, you know, the stay at home. Meanwhile, second waves are usually deadlier because people don't take the precautions necessary. So they start partying, start drinking, start doing whatever it is that they want to do. And when it kicks in, when that second wave comes by, the Grim Reaper be smiling. So I think there's that duality of jobs available and potential second wave. Am I missing anything?
I'm curious. Oh, yeah. I mean, I just think it's curious. Like, first of all, a lot of these workers are dependent upon jobs like restaurants, bars, etc. Those aren't.
Or even hotels.
Like, for the foreseeable future, like, people aren't going to be going out to eat. People aren't going to be traveling, right? Like,
oh, yeah, for sure.
All their money has been spent up, used up on these things. It's like, dude, I mean, think about it. When did all this start to shut down? Basically,
the 13th of March. That's when the first shutdowns were happening.
Yeah, so you're looking at 5 weeks already, right? And it's like, it's $1,200, you know? It's like people are probably freaking out.
Oh, that video you sent? Jeff sent a great video of a guy, like, flipping the fuck out on Twitter. Well, he wasn't really flipping out because he was spitting some mad truth by saying that, you know, these $1,200, they're fucking worthless. People will take it because it's $1,200. But mortgages aren't stopping. People's payments of gas, water, electric, they aren't stopping. Insurance is still going on for both car and health. Like, well, why aren't we
If you're like a family of four and they all have cell phones, you're out like $300 a month just on that.
Yeah, seriously. So the government's all like, hey, we're going to be helping out. And then they give you $1,200 and like, fucking figure it out. And fucking Mnuchin's like, oh, yeah, you know, a normal human being can survive 10 months on $1,200. Like, what the fuck are you talking about, man? What? Like, what are you eating? Like, you eating fucking, like, just Frito chips and fucking cheese? Like, what? No way.
Well, I know, man. I think the whole thing is just kind of wonky. You know, we sit here and talk about this continually, but at the end of the day, you sit here and you can imagine, like, these are real conversations taking place amongst basically a bunch of millionaires in Washington. And they're deciding what your life is worth. And not to mention, you momos that are all kind of like hardcore leftist or rightist or whatever. If you're on one side or the other, diehard, rah-rah, team, whatever, you really got to take a look in the mirror and realize that is a terrible way to voice your political opinion.
That's very true. I agree with you 100%.
Like, Bernie Sanders right now today, what has he done ever since he failed to get elected?
He started a movement.
Now he's creating groups. But my question is like, did he come down with some sort of serious illness? And that's why he was just like, look, guys, I mean, Joe Biden, I've realized that, you know, the Democratic National Committee just, they just don't like me. This isn't going to take place. X, Y, and Z. I don't feel good. I'm not going to fight another basically Hillary Clinton 2.0 and Joe Biden. Go at it. And while you're at it, go fuck yourselves.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the disease he's got is spinelessness. That's what he's suffering from.
Well, didn't he have a heart attack or something?
He did. He did have a heart attack sometime maybe February or January, sometime then. Dude, if I had a heart attack, I'd be like, listen, I don't want to fucking deal with this. I mean, you deal with half the haters hate you. You know, your own party hates you. You have supporters that are just, you know, idiots. I get it. I get it, Bernie. You know, if you were maybe 10 years younger, maybe you'd push for it. But even then, I don't know. Any man that is not loyal to his friends when they were shit on, I don't see as a good leader.
I don't know. I mean, I'm curious about the entire thing. I'm curious about, you know, actually, I'm also curious about, Adam, what was that article you sent out about how, like, Harvard, Columbia, Princeton, and all those elite Ivy League schools also received, like, a tranche of loans?
Yeah, a fucking,
or grants, I guess?
No, there wasn't a loan. There was a grant. Harvard got $10 million from that relief bill. Why? I don't understand. It's got a $41 billion endowment. You know, Yale and Stanford likewise have similar endowments. It's like, why are you people getting taxpayer money? For what exactly? To what? For student aid?
Like,
get fucked.
Like, Shake Shack went out and they gave their money back. And then Rick Scott in the state of Florida was like, what the fuck? Why are you guys giving out basically this? It turns into a grant. It's very weird. I was talking about this the other day with somebody, and it has like all these loopholes in it to where like eventually you could actually get fucked pretty hard by the government if you don't use it for the right stuff.
Yeah, like you have to use it within the allotted like slot time, and then you can't fire anybody within a specific time. You can't do. There's a whole bunch. I think there's like a list of 137 different stipulations that you can't like do or you must do in order to have it be seen as a grant as opposed to a loan.
I thought it was pretty funny. Also, in the bill, it says that you can use this for basically anything related to payroll, and you can also use it for real estate investment. What?
Well, of course. Of course you can.
What?
So it's like, it's either one or the other. Like, what do you mean real estate investment? Which makes sense. Which I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but there's a Russian baker. She had I think we talked about this before, but maybe off the podcast. So this is a Jimmy Dore episode. Jimmy Dore was talking to a Russian baker, and he asked her something to the extent of, "How come you're buying up all these bakeries now in times of pandemic? Or shouldn't she be going under like all these other bakers?" And she said something to the extent of, "Oh no, I'm Russian. I have saved enough money to last through 6 months of a crisis in case of my, business burning down or something to that extent. And now that all these other bakeries are going under, I'm just buying them up with the money that I have. And you know what I'm doing? I'm only baking bread. I'm not baking any cakes. I'm not baking any muffins, because right now all people want is bread. And they're willing to pay, $1 to $4 for a loaf of bread. Meanwhile, nobody's buying up cakes. Nobody's buying up muffins. So, brilliantly, she, she's just making exactly the choices that a good business person should be doing. And instead of, having just enough in your business account to survive for 2 weeks to pay your employees. So, in a way, this kind of this whole crisis proves to me that we have a whole bunch of incompetent business people out there. I mean, that's just my point of view. Your thoughts?
Well, no, but I mean, incompetence is kind of like what is running the day in these mass corporations. Like, well, I mean, fuck mass corporations. Who cares about labeling them lump sum? I mean, like, basically the airlines, man. Like, those motherfuckers. Dude, so I was dicking around trying to get things, like, hammered down. I ended up getting a cheap ticket, but this was after the fact that the airlines completely fucked me on these points. So, like, basically things were set up pretty dope, and then, like, they're like, oh, yeah, but when you get to Tokyo, you have to transfer airports. And I was like, whoa,
it's like, do you know how far away that fucking airport is?
Well, no, not only that, you can't leave the airport. I can't go from
Narita. Fucking Narita and Hinata are, like, fucking, like, 25 miles apart.
50, actually. Is it? So you get a high-speed, train, so you're there in, like, an hour or 20 minutes. It takes 70 minutes, nonetheless. But notwithstanding, I said, hey, so... what's the contingency plan if I get into Narita and then you guys don't want to let me go to Haneda? Well, I don't know. And it was like this angry lady. I don't know. I don't know what to do about this. I don't know. And I was like, well, look, lady. Like,
why can't you be living in Kansas and going to Ohio? What is this?
I was like, who's your boss? Like, don't you guys do you watch the news? Because Japan just had like an emergency, like you're not allowed to leave the airport, I know that I just googled that on whatever.
Yeah.
And she hung up on me,
dude. So, what, dude, fuck her.
Yeah, so then I called back again.
That's
and I
a non-essential employee right there, fired.
Well, they're all non-essential really, but then I mean, even if the airlines were in operation, there was no corona, fuck them all. But I called back and I met another nice young lady and I said, hey, so have this predicament. What can we do? So they finally get this theory in their mind. Like, all right, well, look, I'll get you out of Taipei instead of Narita. And I was like, okay, so it sounds to me we had a pretty logical conversation about the fact that the destination from which I'm, or say the departure city that I'm leaving from is still Saigon. Mm-hmm. Okay, that never changed. Okay, sir. Well, we're all set. Do you want me to go ahead and finalize this? So Taipei, to whatever. I was like, yeah, but I hate to be a bother, but what about the Saigon flight?
Like, I'm leaving out of a different city.
She goes, oh, well, you'll need to figure out how to do that. Wait, what? Yeah, so then I was like, all right, hold on. All right, let me see. Because Taipei to Ho Chi Minh City is like 4 hours. Like, not bad. You probably get a flight typically for like $100, we'll say. Uh-huh. Pop on there. Hey, what's up, Expedia? What can we do for me here? Uh-huh. Oh, my God. $2,800 in 46 hours to get from Ho Chi Minh City to Taipei?
Holy shit.
That's not going to work. Anyways, push comes to shove at the end of the day. Again, it was just like, it's just incompetence begets incompetence. And I'm still curious, like this is the end of it, right? Like, so for instance, nobody's been working, or a lot of people have been out of work in the United States for the last 30 days. And then it'd say there's a huge percentage of people in the service sector that are just like, you know, bartenders or whatever in like that world. Okay, so there hasn't been another response, has there? Like, they released another $500 million, right, for like small to medium sized businesses, right?
Yeah, but what about like people billion? Weren't working? Like, what about those 22 million people in unemployment?
Yeah, again, it's an American concept that just always drives me insane. That, like, dude, they're totally putting all these businesses before just like the regular dude. Like, you gotta pay your mortgage, you got a cell phone, you got gas, you got whatever, you got a kid. They're like, well, no, but if we have this economic principle that we say we're going to invest into these businesses, well, then they're going to be able to bring you back and hire you. Fuck, man. They're not going to do that.
It's like, it's of course they're not. Like, number one, like, they're going to have, you know, lower turnouts at their businesses. Their businesses aren't going to be producing as much to begin with. And then two, it's like, you know, some of these places are going to be fucking cutting and slashing. There's going to be some burning going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think more importantly as well, it's just like, if you got a job tomorrow, say, right, and then it's like, okay, I contacted the Olive Garden, right, the world's shittiest Italian restaurant,
by the way. Dude, their breadsticks are pretty good.
Just got to throw that out, because my ex-boss is a lunch lady, and she always told me about her managerial experience at Olive Garden. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God, get out of here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Experience at the Olive Garden. It's pretty
fucking awful. Anyways, I said, you know, what are they going to do? You're going to start next week, and when do you get your first paycheck?
That's right. When do you get that first paycheck, huh? A week from now? Yeah. 2 weeks from now? 3 weeks from now?
Yeah.
And there you go. Are you getting paid in breadsticks, huh? Breadsticks and macaroni.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's all fucked. I don't really know how to go with this. I think, so, you know, to kind of transition a bit, you know, I can't remember specific details because I read it last week, but I think one premise I wanted to bring about with that Orwell story.
Uh-huh.
So we read a short story. Adam, do you recall the title of it off the top of your head?
No, I don't. It's something about murder. It's something about murder. Hold on.
Yes.
I have no idea.
But anyways, I think it's pretty interesting to look back in the times when like serene crisis took place, and this is what George Orwell was authoring. When it was like 1946 or something around then.
Yes.
You know, and this is post World War II, and he was talking about how there was like this dearth and the fascination against you know, murder mysteries taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious now, because if you relate this back to like sort of like what we're doing now with this obsession with Netflix and Tiger King and all this other stuff, you know, what is it about sort of our society today that's going to transform from what we used to be fascinated with into sort of like the next generation of people post-corona? Is this kind of obsession about infectious diseases and all these issues sort of relating to this economic downturn actually going to creep into the mentality of the average American person? Or is it going to sort of fade away, right? So like post-World War II, faced with mass attrition, destruction, all these things, but somehow, some way, right, the global population was able to enter back into making all of these terrible decisions.
Mm. The name of the story is called The Decline of the English Murder.
Hmm.
Or the essay. It's an essay.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, you guys check it out. If you go to, like, Orwell, I can't remember the exact website, but it's free. Just Google George Orwell's website.
Yeah, just just type in Decline of the English Murder.
And it all pops up.
I found that a great essay, because it talks about how murder was really popular in murder stories all throughout the early 1900s, especially after the World War. And the way that Orwell, he talks about, you know, Jack the Ripper, and how Jack the Ripper is like the epitome of a murder story, and how people love that story. And why do people love it? Is it this animal like fascination with blood? Is it this like, you know, this social idea of a scandal? What is it that makes us really, really, really like, you know, watching, let's say, Tiger King or what was that really popular one about the Michigan one? Do you know which one I'm talking about?
To Make a Murderer?
Was that what it was called?
I don't know.
To Make a Murderer. Yeah, that's what it was. Well, the way that that Mr. Orwell goes about it is that he looks at all the guys who, you know, ended up killing, ended up slicing and dicing, and he came down that the people that we're most attracted to are the people from like a professional class, you know, a dentist, a solicitor, somebody who you know, made it in the world in some small amount, you know, a middle class manager. And we just love seeing those people snap. We just love seeing those people start slicing and dicing people that we ourselves are too civilized to slice and dice, but we would love to kill, you know, our bosses, our wives, somebody like that, somebody who is, you know, who became a conformist, and through the murdering that they've been doing, through the violence that they've been, you know, more or less, you know, dealing out, became nonconformists. It's this hatred and this wrestling with your conscience and with the society that created these murderers. Because obviously, these are Orwell's words, a murderer isn't somebody that's born. It's somebody that has gone through some sort of mental change that society has imposed upon them. And that's a very interesting thing to note, especially with the Tiger King thing, because, you know, his meth addiction, his lovers, and his passion for tigers, did that make him
I think also
what he became?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, continue. I'm done.
No, but I mean, like, yeah, just being sort of like this renegade dude who, like, wanted to be, you know, it's really funny for me, too, like, the way the bandwagon has sort of transitioned against, like, on the one hand, you know, people shit on this guy, right? And they say, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he's a representation of sort of ill will and exploitation and animal rights abuses and all these things. But on the other hand, too, it's like there's this hyper level of attraction to the extent to which, like, the subscription rates and viewership of this show on Netflix has just, like, shot through the moon.
Yeah, and I like think it's because we want to live vicariously through these people. I think that's what it is. I think today's society, unlike societies prior to it, have been neutered. You know, before people watched people getting slaughtered in the Colosseum, people saw fighters. This is why sports are so popular. We want to see some blood. We want to see some violence and sweat. And seeing as, you know, today's males and today's... I guess today's males are just kind of... told you can't play tackle football because you'll get hurt. You can't play slide baseball because you might hurt the other person. You can't do this. You can't do that. What happens is that this attraction to this sort of buildup of emotions and you know, it just explodes via us wanting to be this person. You know, that's on TV. That's why, you know, violent video games are so popular, because they release this tension. They release this animal brain sort of want for violence.
Yeah, I think also, too, it just shows you, like, what Orwell is relating to, right, is basically it took a huge cataclysmic event like World War II to shift the American mentality, or say the British mentality, in fact, or whoever, the subscribers that were interested in following deeply into murder. It took a huge violent event to get people to think differently about things. And so two things. I think on the one hand, okay, will this be a generational shift where there actually is enough, say, fodder or cannon powder? I don't know what you use to fire a cannon. Something like that. Gunpowder, right?
Yeah.
To actually carry a movement to where people start to think about policies differently and actually – vote conscientiously and actually start shopping conscientiously.
Hold on.
Or is it better yet when instead you could be actually delving deeply into these issues to try to understand how you could actually be, you know, working to create some level of change or understanding? You all just sit down and watch Tiger King for 10 hours.
Yeah. So, I mean, think that's a very optimistic way of looking at it from my perspective.
No, I'm pessimistic. I mean,
are you? Okay, then I agree with you, because for me, I feel like people are going to be dumber after this. Mostly 100%. because I don't know what it is. Why the fuck is everyone posting cakes and, you know, banana bread and the shit that they've been making at home? Like, it's not appetizing. I don't want to see it. Like, I can make my own, like, you know, eggs and fucking pickles. Like, I don't give a fuck about what you made and you ate. Like, people's narcissism is showing because eggs they need to post the food that they've been eating. Like, I didn't like it before. I don't like it now. And in the future, people are going to be like, well, check out my Instagram for what I was eating during the pandemic. Brother, listen, nobody cares. And then two, I've noticed this intense... And sorry for this tangent, but it's got to be pointed out. This intense and overwhelming, you know, posting of your children's pictures. Jesus Christ. Like, I don't give a fuck about your kids. Nobody does. Stop showing me pictures of here they are in the garden. Here they are, you know, swimming. Here they are walking. Oh, my God, they're playing with the dog. Oh, here we are doing homework. Like, I don't need a play-by-play of what your children are doing. And number two, it's like, that's creepy. Like, there's some pedophile out there probably jacking off to your kids, doing whatever it is that they're doing. Like, stop. Stop posting cakes in your children's pictures.
Man, make that viral, and you'll see those kids' pictures disappear real quick.
I mean, just think about it. Are these parents not thinking about this? Like, why are you posting all these pictures of your children? Like, for your grandparents to see? Like, power to you. Like, send that via text message.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I think, like, the child sort of, like, saturation or just explosion of children's photos is sort of just, like, isn't that just representative of the ego, right? It's like,
yeah, it's people are always like child self-interested worship.
And talking about, like, you know, whatever. It's like, look at what I'm up to, blah, blah, blah. And I know, like, you know, what's the problem with social media in general is just sort of like, again, dude, I'm totally becoming that old man. Get off my lawn. But, dude, the problem with it is, like, it takes away from the moment. One, like, instead of actually being heavily sort of mindful, right, of, like, what you should be doing, engaging with your child. You're thinking about, like, oh, I wonder, like, who's going to respond to this or what they're going to think or ha, 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 funny comment. Two, it just kind of, like, goes to show you, like, people, they just don't really have much to do.
Well, that, like, and they treat their children like accessories. It's like, no, that your kid's, like, you know, a human being that you're supposed to shape and mold to become, like, something worthwhile, something that will maybe change the world. Instead, you know, you're feeding your kids a whole bunch of shitty cake. Like, I don't give a fuck. Like, you know, Fat Billy and, like, fucking Joanne, it's like, oh, great. They're fucking running around in circles again. Cool. Like,
man, I just
think, why is, like, that on? Why am I seeing this?
There's too many people in this world now. Now it's like they've all come down to this idea of, like, they all want to hit that YouTube algorithm. So, like, basically half of the world sat around trying to come up with a catchy tune.
Yeah, that's what TikTok is, right?
Dude, fuck TikTok.
TikTok's a bunch of people jumping around to, like, you know, 15-minute bits of corporate music, and they're like, oh, now I'm super popular. Like, get out of here.
And again, you know, TikTok, it, like, specifically is a Chinese state-run media platform, you idiots. Like, if I see any more fucking obsession or, like, disregard for this... whatever it is, this China obsession. Like, again, I am still so taken aback by the fact that people, all this bullshit, especially growing up in Colorado, I always heard about going green, doing this, doing that. It's like, yeah, motherfucker, you still shop at Walmart, you know?
No, fuck going you. Green at Walmart, man. Fuck I'm going ideals. Green.
Well, dude, think
I'm going
about
green
about
by going much, blue.
Right, the carbon emission that takes place to ship your shitty goods from some port in, like, Guangzhou.
Yeah, dude, but
Houston.
Guess what? I eat like, you know, homegrown avocados, you know, while I order 12 packages from Amazon every day.
Dude,
I'm green.
I'm curious to see what actually, like, I am pretty pessimistic on this, too. I don't think people have the sense of community anymore to want, like, again, like, especially Americans, like, that's the one thing that is just like, you know, America for me is not like a forever home kind of thing.
Because likewise.
Like, there's just no sense of real community. And people can argue against this, but yeah, man, but, like, I meet up with my buddies, we all have beards and we brew beer. Like, is that, yeah, cool. Sure, bro. whatever.
You know what? There, I think a lot of it has to do with the death of God or the death of religion. I'm not a religious fella, as people that know me know. But I think this.
Hold on. Adam proactively went about having himself excommunicated from the Catholic Church.
That's very true. I sent letters to the Vatican and to the bishop to get myself excommunicado from the Catholic Church, and here I am, soul completely free from any religion. I can do whatever I want, and ain't no God gonna punish me. So. The thing is, though, like, this death of God is really, like, really concerning, because everybody's turning to a whole bunch of other shit, like, you know, like future worship via their children and, you know, fame and the idea that they're going to become something. Meanwhile, they're not really doing anything. You can't really become something when you're not sacrificing and being determined.
Well, I mean, I think that's like kind of like, so, okay, that's like the thing I wanted to talk about, too, just like the law of diminishing returns, right? It's like, dude, I can only feel like, so invested in something that I experienced a few times. So whatever you want to equate that to, it's like, I'm just kind of worried about how bored people are getting right now.
Like, yeah, but think about that. What they to do me, all day the idea of boredom itself is really fucked up. Like, how I don't understand how a person can be bored. Like, dude, here I am, like, in this house all by myself, and I could find something to do. Dude, and not just, like, watch TV.
Yeah, build a bookshelf.
Like, I could fucking, yeah, build a bookshelf. I have a shit ton of books here. I could start reading. I could go for a walk with my dog. I could do some gardening. I could start cooking. I could be like, oh, shit, maybe I need to, like, paint something, you know? Maybe I don't need – I buy, like, something at Menards or something, and just like put something together. Maybe I need to clean something up. Maybe I need to, you know, get an oil change. Why don't I do that? Like, there's always something to do. So when somebody tells me like, oh, I'm bored, the only thing I'm hearing is, oh, I'm incompetent and I don't know how to find something to do.
So that's what I wanted to forward. My point was like, the sense of community is bullshit in the United States, and this is what drives me nuts, right? So all these people that are getting on social media and they're putting out these platforms and they do what they do, it's like they're just still asking for attention themselves, right? Like,
this they're asking for community. That's the thing. They're trying to find an online community that will accept them.
Here's the difference. Like, if you think about it this way, they want a community that supports them. They don't want to support a community themselves.
That's a good point. Right? It's very interesting. Yeah. So it's like that. What's that book, Bowling Alone? You know,
right? So Robert Putnam,
yeah, great book.
So Robert Putnam's like, he's like, you know, talking about social capital, and this is basically the idea that since the 1990s in the Midwest in particular, the memberships of bowling leagues dipped significantly, right? So you can then go from there and tease out what this means in terms of like the reduction in social capital within the society, right? The social fabric that knits us all together, and what does this mean for your community at large? I think the digitization of this stuff taking place, mixed with this kind of continual affliction of narcissism we as human beings all face, is really spiraling out of control now. And this is a direct, you know, say not causal effect or whatever, but it is correlated to the extent to which you could say, like, there is a reason why the social fabric of the United States is so broken. Because we've been pushing this idea of individuality, right? This idea of now, say, intersectionality, of now these ideas that you as an individual matter more before the, say, interests of the communities of the community does.
And now that's why these like, protests are kind of ridiculous, because it's like, oh, my freedom matters over the health of all these other people.
My freedom. Me. Yeah. It's like, fuck, homie. Look, if your society dies or becomes anarchic or whatever, like, you're fucked. You need the community to support your interests. But it does need to be, it does need to sort of precede your interests, right? This is why they talk about service and public duty and blah, 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 which are also all trigger flash words in the United States.
Oh, yeah, they're political lexicon terms now. Yeah. To me, I find it hilarious. A buddy of mine, Dave, shout out to Dave. Dave Sitko, good guy, friend of the show here. He pointed out he has a he follows this long time lover too. what was I gonna, so he follows this group, right? This group like a local Homer Glen, you know, just like a town group or whatever, where all these people on there used to be all about you know, Blue Lives Matter. And then when these protests started, they're like, well, no, fuck the police. Like, well, I got my freedom. I want to do what I want to do. So it's like, oh, so it's fuck the police when it's not affecting you, But now, or it's Blue Lives Matter when it's not affecting you, but now it's fuck the police when you're not allowed to go and get a haircut. Like, ooh, now I see. I see your hypocrisy and your inability to actually stay congruent and coherent on your ideology. Like, I see what's going on here.
Yeah, man, I don't know. So what do you think, though, in terms of, like, the community? I mean, you know what's weird about you? Like, not you, but the communities in Chicago. Maybe it's just because I related back to sort of childhood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mother's from that part of the country. And it seemed to me like they were always pretty cool. Like, they had good block parties.
Yeah, like, I think it's still the same overall in general.
That
I think
does not exist in Colorado at all.
I think it's a Midwestern thing, man. I think, like, Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, like, Iowa, all these states around here, there's big cities, but there's also that, like, you know, that wide space where it's nothing but corn and some water and rivers, and people get lonely, so they come together, and, you know, they drink, they make food, and they have fun.
Well, maybe and that's I think the thing of it is, though, too, is, like, back to the current crisis, this is you can always tease things out, right? I mean, there's, like, a lot of ways to think about the way in which sort of the duality that persists between, like, this idea of, you know, women and men wanting to be equal parties when it comes to employment vis-a-vis, mm-hmm. like, what, you know, versus, like, what is the effect of this on a household, right? So
yeah.
You can debate that 6 away from Sunday, whatever. And again, it's like, whatever. That's your own opinion. I think, you know, having one partner be with the children is something that's extremely important for the family. Male, woman, whatever. Like, it doesn't really matter.
I mean, it worked for, like, thousands of years, right? The man went out, you know, worked his ass off, came home, and, you know, the wife was with the kids. And The Feminine Mystique, that book changed everything. I can't remember who wrote it right now off the top of my Betty something Feldman or something like that. But that book was all about how women should get a career and they should do something with their life. Which is saying something completely, you know, in my opinion, wrong, because they were, or some of these women were already fulfilled. They were doing something, and that's taking care of the kids. I understand people, you know, people want to make something of themselves, have a career. But now all of a sudden, you know, all these magazines, these, you know, Teen Vogue and everything else, 17, have completely manipulated women. And, you know, GQ completely manipulates men into falling into these stereotypes that they themselves broke, you know, 40 years ago. So to me, these black parties and everything that we really miss, this community, is kind of like a rebellion against the uniformity of the magazine, the fashion magazine and the culture magazines, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, but think about, like, yeah, I mean, I think so, again, you know, male, woman, whatever, you know, again, putting the family first, right? Like, again, not me, right? What is important to me, right? Well, the important thing here is, like, thinking about the community. So when big multinationals decided to export jobs, right, to boost the American economy, which, again, guys, remember, that just means increase your spending, right? Let's be very clear about that.
Increase your spending and increase the the CEO's big bonuses at the end of the year.
Yeah, because it's pretty basic. You increase your spending, you decrease labor costs. That's all that took place really throughout the 1990s. Thank you, Bill Clinton. High five to you. Now, on top of this, you have to think about the death of the community again, right? So what was put first? The interests of individuals, right, that were raking in capital because they were able to make these agreements, right, by putting together preferential treatments, say tariff agreements, et cetera, with foreign countries. In one case, it was NAFTA. In the other case, it was China, or say Mexico and China. This has been sort of like the big push throughout the 1990s up until really the Trump administration. But what took place by basically putting their interests first, right, to be king in the mountain, so to speak, was really the death of these communities throughout the United States. And I think, like, Midwestern communities are a little bit more, I'd say, proactive and communal. And this also might be kind of a cultural thing, right? Like, if you live in sort of heavily besieged, say, immigrant communities, which, yes, it's like a couple generations removed, but, you know, by and large, within sort of the Midwest, you have a pretty strong presence of Poles and other Eastern Europeans that have a pretty strong tradition of family and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. What you have more so in the West, right, is sort of in the West of the United States, especially Colorado and California or whatever, is a push against sort of like the familial unit. It's sort of like the Brave New World, you know, go out there, young man, and conquer the day kind of thing. And I think that's what's going forward now. And I think this is what's basically represented by like TikTok or any of this other shit. It's like, oh, well, I had a pretty good Instagram follower, and now I'm just going to get on TikTok and do the same thing and boost my thing. You know, meanwhile, China's sitting like, excellent, use my device.
Yes, yes, give me those ads and then give me all your metadata.
So then that's where it goes back to, right? It goes back to this issue again, like during George Orwell's time. And again, you know, if you guys don't read anybody else, read George Orwell, because at least you'll read something worth reading.
I agree.
And not just 1984. Look at the rest of his work, plus his essays. It's very, very well written, deeply thought out, good stuff, right? Especially check out the book Why I Write.
Oh, that's a good one. It's very short too, but it's a great read. I'm also a fan of Burmese Days and Down and Out in
Paris and London.
Paris and London. Also, yeah, what's that one about the Spanish Civil War? I really like that one.
Oh yeah, Farewell, or was it Ode to Catalonia?
Maybe that's what. But those three are, I think, because they're nonfiction. They ring more honestly than his fiction. Even though his fiction rings true too, so.
But
that's just fucking just read everything Orwell wrote. Just read it.
If I could leave like with one idea about the thing, it's like, again, like think about what's taking place right now. We've had this world in which we kind of had like the environment's improving slightly. We're starting to think about how these crazy networks of logistics don't actually work. We see the obsession of self through these social media platforms, whatever it is you're doing, you're cooking, or you know, the kids running in the backyard or whatever the fuck it is, and start to think more about what builds communities, what you want to see the society for those children to actually live in. You know, do you want these children to grow up to be narcissistic pieces of shit, or do you want them to enter into a society where they're like, I can proactively be a part of a community, be a part of, right? Not have the community carry me on their shoulders, but really run out there into the world of civil society or whatever it's you're going to do. And really be a proactive, you know, good young man or young woman.
Well said.
Do something. And I agree. Right now is the time to think about it. You're all at home doing jack shit because clearly you're all baking fucking cakes.
So, fucking banana bread. I don't get it. Why is everybody all of it? Is that the easiest bread to make?
I love
banana bread. And like, that's it. That's all I see is a whole bunch of fucking banana bread. With that being said, I got one more question for you. Just one more. So California, you know, hired out 15,000 hotel rooms for the homeless. What are your thoughts on that? You think those people are going to leave after this pandemic? What's going to happen there?
Well, it's like I like to say in South Florida, I call it the riffraff express. So basically, if you're homeless, they give you a free bus / metro ticket. So what do you think happens? Well, it's air conditioned. So that seems pretty nice. And then the Bleeding Hearts of Fort Lauderdale thought it was a fabulous idea, or this campaign through Starbucks, to make it so that you could sit in there without purchasing an item. So what do you think happened? Great. So now my $2.50 cup of Joe is now accompanied by the homeless dude in the corner scratching his asshole. This is a great way to spend my afternoon, or the meth head, or they're fighting, or whatever else takes place. So yeah, take a bunch of homeless people. I'm all about it. Fuck up these hotels and let them all embed in there and wait for them to all sit there and squat. Oh, it's going to be beautiful.
Dude, congrats. Congrats, California. You're doing California, doing Lord's
in
work.
And of itself. Hey, you know what I think they should do? Is they should take all these prestigious, quote-unquote, prestigious UC universities, fuck them, state-run. You want to have, like, areas for people to go that are in need of healthcare, or, say, the homeless? Open up all those dorms and let the homeless people run wild all over the campus in UCLA and UC Irvine.
But all these cruise lines don't got passengers anymore. Dude, one of those big boys has like 7,000 cabins. Fill them up. Fill them up, Norwegian. Fill them up, Carnival. Why aren't you doing anything for the people? For the people.
Well, again, what they're doing, again, is they're privying these giant entities, right? I mean, I'm sure I haven't even looked at this, but I'm willing to bet that the cruise liners have received a sizable cut, bailout, whatever you want to call it. The next thing's going to happen with the airlines. Hopefully, Trump is wild enough to say, like, you know what? No. Enough is enough. American, United, done. You're done. Sick of your antics.
It'd be great.
You're out.
I'd love if he do that and then pardon Assange.
Yeah, do it. And you know who else he should pardon? Tiger King.
Dude, his numbers would skyrocket. I don't know if you saw, but there was a news conference and somebody asked them, they're like, do you know the Tiger King Joe Exotic? And he's like, oh no, who's that? Joe Exotic, that's an interesting name. And you know, the lady tells him, or the guy tells him, like, Joe Exotic did this and that, blah blah blah. He may have killed his his lover or something like that.
And I'll put a hit out on her.
Yeah, hit on her. And Trump's like, oh well, you know, with a name like Joe Exotic, sounds like a good guy. So there might be a possibility.
Dude, well, I mean, to wrap up sort of this point, because I got to run, because I got a maid coming over, and then I got to throw shit in a bag, and then I got to go high five some weird people at a Vietnamese tax office, which should be sweet.
Ooh, good luck with that.
But it's always great. But the state owes me, Adam, so I'm here to take my fair share. God damn it.
Yeah, no, but you're white. They're going to be like, oh, no, 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 you caused coronavirus.
Come do it. No, I'm going to be sitting there, whatever. But I think what's interesting about Trump, again, like, people placing moral value on things that, like, don't really require moral assessment. It's like, and everybody could probably argue with you about this, but I liked his approach to sort of like his diplomacy when they're like, Kim Jong-un's really sick. And he's like, oh, I hope the best for him.
Yeah, I guarantee it was really cool.
Obama would not have had that response because, like, again, it's like bringing people to the table. Isn't the goal of diplomacy more or less to find a group of very disagreeable individuals, though they can have a pretty powerful impact globally, and find a way to mitigate that to bring them to some form of agreement or rapprochement or whatever? Mm-hmm. And that's what he's done fairly decently, I would say, with different things. And I think, kind of to wrap this up, and I think Adam will have a little bit more to say about this, but what his response was to Iran just yesterday, I think this is coming to a point where we do need some form of bellicose kind of strong leadership, because
I agree.
I don't know, man. Don't let small actors dictate global affairs. Fuck them.
That's true. You know,
that's all.
First they tell you can't have the peanuts. Next thing you know, you're getting raped.
Well, so. No, but I mean, you know, like how Trump was saying, he's gonna shoot any Iranian ship down, whatever it was.
He said that the Navy should shoot down any Iranian gunboats that threaten American ships.
Yeah,
so
why not?
On that
I
note,
don't know, man. I just think this whole thing, at the end of the day, what's taking place with the new sort of rigmarole with the Democratic Party and how basically corrupt Obama was and still is, you know, and his endorsement for Joe Biden. I don't know, man. Trump is—he's not great for sure, but my God. My God, people.
Man, he's figure something much better out. than I don't know where I am Biden.
Well, did you see that? Michelle Obama probably going to be the nominee for the VP.
Is that what the word is? I called it, man. I called it.
I sent you that. Yeah, it was like a snippet. Like, oh, there's 13 others in the running. But it was like, dude. It's dude, just history's repeating I itself. Knew it.
Like, that's the only way he could possibly win is via Michelle Obama. For the nostalgia for the 8 years prior. Only way.
Oh,
and even then, if he does, it's going to be very close.
I wonder if she comes in, if they're going to double down on those cages on the border. Ooh. Or if they're going to basically double down on Guantanamo.
No, like, man, they're going to make sure that the people in those cages are eating healthy. You know, getting their apples and their oranges in there.
Well, on that note, guys, I got to go catch a flight in a couple days, and then I also got to eat a lot of apples and oranges, get my fiber up, my vitamin C up, because I'm going to be hopefully chilling in basically a private jet across the Pacific, because I imagine nobody's going to be on these flights.
Hopefully. Relax and stay safe and healthy out there.
All right, guys, we'll be in touch. Clint, we'll see you next week. Adam, as always, it's been a pleasure.
Likewise. Share, subscribe. Peace out. La 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 la.